Now when the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me what I may do for you before I am taken from you." Elisha said, "Please let me inherit a double share of your spirit." We've all known someone in our faith journey, someone we looked up to, someone we admired, someone we respected, someone whose presence on our path impacted and affected us as believers, someone who was the example of Christ that we needed to experience. For me, as I grew up in a church in the small town I grew up in, it was this little, unassuming, little old lady named Louise Lee. The church I grew up in, Louise was a leader, a calm, compassionate voice from a loved and respected elder in our church. Louise embodied the true spirit of Christ. She was gracious, generous, caring, and kind. She gave of herself and sacrificed so others could have something. She truly resembled what I believe a Christian is supposed to be. She was Christ-like in her mannerism, in her actions, in her words. Louise believed in helping others. She believed in working for justice. She believed in a church that was a welcoming place for all of God's children. Louise bore great fruit. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. That was Louise to a T. I am sure you had a Louise on your journey somewhere, someone who was that living representation of Jesus Christ, not only to you, but to others, someone who bore such great fruit that others were just drawn to be near them, drawn to try to understand what made them that way, drawn to understand their spirit. For Elisha, that was Elijah, the prophet of God, the one who had proclaimed the word, the one who had spoken that good word, who had helped the people to turn back to God. Last week we talked about how Elijah went through the trials as he battled the prophets of Baal, over 500 of them, and how he was able to help the people see the one true God and to turn back to that God. But now Elijah has gotten old. He is tired, and the time has come to be called home. So he goes out in the wilderness, but Elisha follows him. And Elijah cannot get Elisha to stop. He keeps telling him, "Stop. You stay here. I have to go on. This is something I have to do." But Elisha won't leave his side, even when they leave the company of the 50 men that have come with them. And Elijah convinces those men to stop. Elisha won't stop. He wants to be near Elijah every moment that he can. He wants to be drawing in that spirit that Elijah has. He wants to be sampling that good fruit that comes from all that Elijah does. Finally, as the moment draws near, Elijah asks, "Tell me, Elisha, what may I do for you before I am taken from you?" And Elisha answers, "Please let me inherit a double share of your spirit. This fruit that you have been producing, let me produce more of it because it's good fruit. So the spirit you've had, I want a double share. I want to do more good. I want to even more embody Christ to this world. What you have, give me a double portion." If I could have had one thing from Louise before she passed away, it would have been this very thing. Let me have double of that spirit that has been on you all these years. I have seen firsthand the fruit that she produced. I want twice as much of that good fruit in my life. Love and joy and peace, patience and kindness and generosity, faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. Yes, please. A double helping, if you would. I am extra hungry. The world is watching us. As we claim to be church, claim to be the body of Christ in this 21st century, the world watches, looking to see what we put out into the ethos. What fruit do we bear from our faith? What visible, tangible things does our faith produce in us? How do we treat others? Most especially those from whom we cannot expect to receive anything back. How do we treat the outcast, the ostracized, the outsider? How do we care for the widow, for the orphan, for the immigrant? How do we prioritize our time and our attention, our resources and our gifts? What is important to us? What are we putting out there? Paul exhorts us in Galatians to produce the good fruit, filled with God's Spirit, love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and generosity and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control should be what emanates from our very being. These are the things the world should know us by. The world should not need to hear us speak the word as we know it. The world does not need to understand our theology, to understand what we're putting out there. The world should not need to read our website or hear our sermons to know whose we are. They should be able to tell by the fruit that we are producing. And I hope that it's good fruit. I really do. I hope that it is that good fruit, because there is an alternative to good fruit. When I was growing up in our neighborhood, there was a neighbor that had a fruit tree that grew on his land, but the branches leaned over onto ours. And every summer, as I'd be running around with my friends playing games and riding our bikes and playing baseball and basketball, we would watch this tree from early spring when it first woke up from its winter slumber, and those small green tips began to spread out from the branches through the warm summer days when the leaves would come out vibrant and green into the waning days of summer when the fruit would begin to grow ripe and it would be time to eat it. We would be so excited as the fruit would begin to fall off the tree. We would gather some of those pieces that fell in our yard. We would run away to enjoy this treat that we've waited on for so long. We have watched this tree grow. We have watched it produce its fruit. And now it is time to sample it. We would take that fruit and we would bite into it. And every year we would encounter the disappointment of childhood expectation not met. The fruit was awful. Awful. It was bitter and sour and mealy. Oh, it was just the worst. And for some reason, as a child, my memory couldn't go back 365 days to remind me, you hated it last summer too. Every summer I would be fooled because the tree looked amazing. It would bush out with the leaves and we'd think, this is it. This is the year, like Charlie going to kick that football as Lucy holds it for him. We would get so excited and the fruit was just bad. It was just not good fruit. Sometimes bad fruit is produced. The tree can look healthy. It can be well taken care of. It can be watered and fertilized and pruned. It can appear to have all the benefits and advantages of life. And when the fruit finally pops out, it's just bad fruit. Paul warns us against this bad fruit fornication, impurity, licentiousness, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, anger, quarrels, dissension, factions, envy, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these. Paul knows how far too often followers of Christ who have been saved by grace, filled with God's Spirit, can still produce this bad fruit. These things are so easy to fall into. Dissension, factions, strife. How many times during the week do I discover that somebody doesn't agree with me and doesn't have the God-given common sense to realize I'm right? Impurity, when I'm failing to strive for the things of God, when I'm settling on the things of this world. Envy, when I see what others have and what I want and desire. Anger, oh, anger. How many times has the world been watching for love and kindness and only gotten anger from me? How many times has the fruit I produced been bitter and sour because of my anger? How many times did I disappoint those who had eagerly waited to see what fruit would come to me because I soured it with my anger? In our early service this morning, Francis Schaeffer was the elder. He had forgotten that. He luckily was here. He was sitting on the front row. Came time to do the offering. The deacon stood up and Francis just sat there. They kind of nudged him. He looked back at him like, am I in your way? And they said, you're supposed to be serving. Francis is like, me? Okay. And he jumped up, got the offering placed, big smile on his face, gave them out. They brought the offering back up. He said his prayer. He got up for communion, did the prayer at the table, handed out communion, smiling the whole time. Afterwards, I said, I'm so glad it was Francis that got caught by whatever this was. Because one of two things happened, right? Either he forgot, or we had the wrong one listed. Either one's possible. Don't know what happened. Right? It was a simple thing. But how many of us would have reacted with a smile? How many of us would have jumped up with that joy in our heart of, okay, I'll serve? How many of us would have been frustrated, irritated? How many of us would have been angry? Well, I should have gotten an email about this. I mean, I haven't been getting the emails. They say they send the emails, but I never see the emails. You know, I don't open my email but once every 3 months, but surely I would have gotten an email that would have told me about this. But that wasn't Francis's reaction. The fruit that he put out there was joy and peace. When we said, hey, you're supposed to be serving, he said, okay. And he jumped up and he ran up to do that. And what a joy that was to see. When you're around someone that's putting that kind of fruit out into the world, it affects you. It changes you. We have a choice. It is a choice which fruit we produce. That's why Paul listed them together in this letter. He knew that there were two options in our lives, two ways that we could go, two fruits that we could possibly produce. The world is standing back and watching to see, and we have a choice to make. Love and peace and joy and gentleness, or strife and jealousy and anger. Both of these fruits can come from us. They start deep within us with a root cause from a seed planted somewhere in our past. We do not produce good fruit without good seed. We do not produce bad fruit without bad seed. From the Spirit of God within us, nurtured by our prayer and our worship and grace, and by our efforts to do the Spirit's bidding, comes forth that good fruit from that sinful nature that we carry with us, that nature that sees me as number one, that nature that thinks more about privileges than responsibilities, that nature that thinks more about self than others. From that nature comes our bad fruit. It reminds me of an old Native American story. There was a grandfather. His, His little grandson often came in the evenings to sit at his knee to ask the questions that children ask. One day the grandson came to the grandfather with a look of anger on his face. Grandfather said, "Come, sit. Tell me what has happened today." The child sat and leaned his chin on grandfather's knee, looking up into the wrinkled old face and the kind dark eyes. The child's anger turned to quiet tears as he began his tale by saying, "I went to town today with father to trade the furs he has collected over the past several months. I was happy to go because father said that since I had helped with the trapping, I could get something for me, something I wanted. I was so excited to be in the trading post. I've not been there before. I looked at many things and finally found a small knife. It was a good size for me, so father got it for me." Here the boy laid his head against grandfather's knee and became silent. Grandfather softly placed his hand on the boy's raven hair and said, "And then what happened?" Without lifting his head, the boy said, "I went outside to wait for father and to admire my new knife in the sunlight. Some town boys came by and saw me. They got all around me and started saying bad things. They called me dirty and stupid. They said that I should not have such a fine knife. The largest of these boys pushed me back, and I fell over another one of them. I dropped my knife, and one of them snatched it up, and they all ran away laughing." Here the boy's anger returned with a passion. "I hate them. I hate them all." Grandfather, with eyes that had seen too much, lifted his grandson's face so his eyes looked into the boy's. Grandfather said, "Let me tell you a story. I too, at times, have felt a great hate for those who have taken so much with no sorrow for what they do. But hate wears you down and does not hurt your enemy. It's like taking poison and wishing your enemy would die. I have struggled with these feelings many times. It's as if there are two wolves inside me. One is white and one is black. The white wolf is good and does no harm. He lives in harmony with all around him. It does not take offense when no offense was intended. It will only fight when it's right to do so in the right way. But the black wolf is full of anger and hatred. The littlest thing will set him into a fit of temper. He fights everyone all the time for no reason. He cannot think because his anger and hate are so great. It is helpless anger, for his anger will change nothing. Sometimes," the grandfather said, "it is hard to live with these two wolves inside of me, with both of them trying to dominate my spirit." The boy sat silently for a moment and then looked intently into his grandfather's eyes and asked, "Which wolf wins?" The grandfather smiled and said, "The one I feed." What fruit will you produce today? Which one will you choose? Which spirit will the world see in you? The harvest is coming. The world is waiting. What fruit will we give to them?